Thank you, Don. This is John Williams. You know how crappy March has been so far? You just said 28. Not too bad.
I know.
Hey, March, your check bounced, okay? I know it's not over, but let's get the job done here, for crying out loud. I know that was the feels like, but come on. My wife, Brenda, before I left this morning, she took Daisy out, and she came back in and said, it feels kind of like spring. So I thought, okay, bring it. It doesn't feel like spring. It feels like December.
I know.
More like spring than it did on Monday.
Well, yeah. That's the point, I guess.
It's the perspective. It's because recency bias, I suppose.
Literally the words out of my mouth today. 32 degrees, I'll take it.
Mm. You know what I'm totally jazzed about? Daylight savings, baby.
Whee!
I'm not familiar. Do you mean daylight saving?
Oh, yeah, right. Thank you, Griffin.
Sorry. We do this twice a year. It's the biannual conversation.
Did I wish you a happy New Year's, Griff?
I know.
Don't you dare.
Have you guys shopped at the Jewels?
I know, exactly. There, right? Yeah, let's not go down that road. Let's just appreciate the fact that this evening, like last night, Brenda and I met downtown. We went over to the Winters Jazz Club to hear some swell jazz, a Nat King Cole tribute. That was kind of fun at Winters on Illinois, downtown, not too far from the Tribune Tower, not too far from the Carson's Ribs where we went before. Or is it Carson Rib, Griffin? I'm not sure. Anyway, we went right by Nordstrom's. So we met at like 5:30. Brenda gets out of the powerful Mach 5, and I had walked over from work to meet her at the spot where she parked, and I just threw up my hands and said, look, it's still light, and this will be 6:30 tomorrow or this weekend. I mean, it's going to be 6:30, 7 o'clock, and you'll still have enough light out there to play baseball or something. So I know I'm just laboring the obvious here, but let's celebrate springing forward. When you go to bed tonight, tomorrow morning, 2 a.m., we'll spring forward, and that will go until November 3rd. Hooray. There's some signs of spring yet, right? That, Don mentioning the music grandstand lineup for the state fair. Baseball on WGN Radio. Are we doing the game on this fine little radio station of ours? I know we got Northwestern basketball, but I think...
Not today, yeah.
We're not doing it today?
No baseball today, yeah. Northwestern at 1:30 is the tip-off, and then we've got hockey at 7 o'clock.
How about that? Another sign of spring is the ongoing debate about rules changes in baseball these days. I just wanted to bounce a few of them off of you guys, and then we'll move on. It's just kind of a pet topic of mine these days. The Atlantic League, I'm not sure where that is, but I'm guessing it's over there, will feature a radar system dubbed TrackMan to help home plate umpires call balls and strikes. So they're going to have some sort of technology that'll beep, strike, boop, ball. Other ideas being evaluated include banning the infield shift, and a 3-batter minimum for pitchers. They're going to also institute in this Atlanta League, mound visits will be eliminated unless you're changing a pitcher. But you can't go out there and say, hey, listen, you just threw 6 straight balls. Why don't you not do that anymore? That's kind of what happens, and they just kind of slow the pitcher down. Now you can't do that anymore.
You know, is that with just coaches, or is that any mound visits whatsoever?
Could the first baseman walk over and say, hey, you just threw 6 straight balls? They're not happy about that over there? I don't know. I mean, I'm guessing that would be from the dugout.
And I'm sure even that would help limit some of those delays, because manager or pitching coaching visits are always way longer than a first baseman or a catcher.
They also say that they're going to increase the size of the bases by 3 inches. That's seen as a safety issue.
Whoa.
Rather than having the two of them fight for space, say the first baseman reaching back and the runner tearing down, maybe if we had a bigger target, then it'll eliminate collisions.
Wow, I hadn't heard that one yet.
Where does the increase go in? Will it be taller? Will it be wider? Like, what do we...
Just on one side.
Well, different.
The bases are a little too tall, if you ask me. I mean, because you see guys' ankles twisting when they make contact.
Yeah.
But this says that they are going to increase the size of the bases by 3 inches. I presume... Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. If you increase it by 3 inches, do you mean the length on a side, or do you mean the circumference all the way? I don't know.
Right.
Anyway. They are also, they said, listen to this, I'll just finish this, they're going to reduce the time between innings by 30 seconds, Currently, it's an hour and a half. It's going to go down to, no, I think it's right now 90 seconds, Joe.
That's about right, yeah.
And so it's going to be 30 seconds shorter. And the second half of the season in the Atlantic League, they're going to move the mound back 2 feet.
Whoa.
It'll now be 62 feet, 6 inches. I think that will make a huge difference for the batters.
That will.
And a huge difference for the pitchers. Somewhere a third baseman said thank you very much, but it's clear what they're trying to do. You'll have to have two players on either side of second base. The mound is going to go back. You'll have less opportunity to settle a pitcher. They're trying to generate more runs.
Hopefully they can categorize this specifically enough to where they don't just make all these changes and say, oh, the game's better, but they don't know which one
right.
is
so
actually
what
beneficial.
Was it that made it better?
Right.
Well, I think moving the mound back is like going to be a godsend to hitters.
Yeah. I mean, well, that's what they're trying to do is bring more offense back into the game, and that'll definitely help because you can see how the pitches are coming a lot more easily, yeah. and that
However,
takes away from the pitchers.
What about this, guys? Don, you're kind of a scientist. Won't that allow for more break on the ball? Right, because the movement doesn't begin immediately. The ball has to spin and have some time and distance. Well, just imagine the hook on a slider now.
Absolutely. Two extra feet for that to take
effect. It's got that much more room. So maybe you get I don't know. Maybe certainly you'll have a better chance to hit a fastball.
But a lot of times the hitters actually prefer to know how good the curveball is so that they can adjust their swing.
They'll track it. There's still more time to track it. Huh?
Correct. Yeah, because you can, I'm going to dip a little bit lower. Because there's even instances where a pitcher, this has been rumored about, that pitchers would be using pine tar to spin the ball. And the other team won't say anything because they want to know that the curveball is going to curve. If it's a hanger and they get whiffed on it, then that adds the element of surprise in there. But if you know which way the ball is going to break, a good hitter can still itemize that. They can still attack on that.
Right. If you said, hey, I'm going to throw you a curveball, it's going to be the best curveball you've ever seen in your life. They'll hit it because they know it's going to be a curveball.
Right.
If they have more time to ascertain that with two more feet of break, yeah, maybe it will neutralize that part of it.
Because the whole thing about pitchers now, it's called tunneling, and it's the ball looks the same way except for the last few seconds.
Right, right.
And then that's when the break comes. So if you push the mound back a little bit, that gives more time for the hitter to respond.
Well, fastball, you're going to have more time to react to. That's for sure.
Right.
Right. Fastball is a fastball. Tends to be relatively straight. And if you've got two more feet, you like your chances there. The other big story, obviously, that's not the big story. The big story that sort of broke yesterday afternoon, and Don will be talking more about, is the Jussie Smollett story. I think we're all tired of that. We got tired of that, and then R. Kelly came along.
Yep.
And now we're tired of the R. Kelly story, too, although neither of these stories seem to be going away in any hurry, and obviously both of them are Chicago stories. So Smollett, the Empire actor, is now indicted on 16 counts of disorderly conduct when he allegedly lied to the police about being a victim of a hate crime. The Chicago Tribune reports today the indictment comes a little more than 2 weeks after prosecutors charged Smollett with a single felony count, and he was released from Cook County Jail after a friend posted a $100,000 bond. There are grades of friendship. A B friend is somebody who will help you move. A B-plus friend is somebody that will let you open the refrigerator at their house without asking. We're such good friends, you just get up and you take something out of the fridge. That's another level of friendship. That's a B-plus friend. An A friend is somebody that will pick you up and drop you off at the airport. The A-plus friend is somebody who will post a $100,000 bond if your name is Jussie Smollett. I mean, seriously. How does that conversation go? Because if I got $100,000, I'm still ticked at you, right? It's like, dude, really? I have to give you $100,000 for what now? Okay, fine. Okay, but boy, I get to raid your refrigerator anytime I want, Jack. And don't even ask for a ride to the airport. Because you have spent that card, man.
Forever.
Smollett is scheduled to appear Thursday in court. He can enter a plea. We don't know what he's going to say. I understand he said he says his story is true still. So I guess he, in theory, could plead not guilty, but it doesn't look good. The conviction on any count could lead to a sentence ranging from probation to 3 years in jail on any of the counts, and there are 16 of them. He's 36 years old. He's accused of staging a phony attack on himself and telling the police he was a victim of a hate crime. The Tribune writes, Smollett said he was walking away from the Subway sandwich shop to his apartment on North Water Street around 2 a.m. January 29th. Remember, it was like 9 degrees below zero that night.
Mm-hmm.
Two men walked up, he said, yelled racial and homophobic slurs, hit him, and wrapped a noose around his neck. The police focus turned to Smollett himself after two brothers, Daryl and his other brother Daryl, were alleged to have been his attackers, told police that Smollett had paid them $3,500 to stage the attack with a promise of another $500 later. Right? So, hey guys, here's the deal. I'm going to give you $4,000 if you agree to, under a video camera, stage a hate crime on me. We're cool?
Plus whatever the sub of the day at Subway was.
How did the brothers, nobody talks about this, how did the brothers think it was going to end for them, right? Okay, $4,000, good. Wait. So anyway, police pieced together much of the evidence because there were 55 police and private surveillance cameras in the area, and none of them seemed to catch what he was talking about. A week before the alleged attack, Smollett told police he received a threatening letter at work. Witnesses told police a postal worker dropped off the letter at the studio where Empire is filmed. It was postmarked from Bedford Park the day before. The letters MAGA were handwritten in the upper left-hand corner of the envelope. Prosecutors said that Smollett staged the attack after he was unhappy with the studio's response to the threatening letter. Studios didn't react enough to it, but the police took it a step further. They said he actually wrote the letter as well. We'll see what happens next Thursday. It's 10:22. This is WGN. After the news, Don's going to update us here in just a couple of minutes. I want you to hear a conversation I had this week with Steve Gadlin. He is the guy who on Shark Tank did the I Want to Draw a Cat for You business launch. It had actually existed before. He's a Chicago comic, I'll say. He's just a fun thinker, and he had an idea that he would draw cats for people on, you know, 8x12 sheets of paper with a Sharpie, and he would charge you $10 for it. They were stick figures, and it was a going concern. He went on Shark Tank, and Mark Cuban, the owner of the Dallas Mavericks and other things, actually invested in his company. So he gained a little fame and then even more business for that. But he is famous to me for even a better reason, and that is this guy, Steve Gadlin, scammed a scammer. There was conversation on this radio station this week about what you do when you're getting scammed. And I said, you know, like the Nigerian prince stories and emails and things like that, or phone calls. And Steve has the best story that you will ever hear about somebody who said, okay, you're trying to rip me off. Here's what I'm going to do. And it resulted in a musical. And we talked to him on the stream this week during White Sox baseball. So it wasn't on WGN radio, but you may have heard the conversation there. But I've edited down to about an 8-minute story. And it's absolutely warm and delightful and hard to believe, but it's true. Now with sports, here's Joe Brand.
And in other news.
All right. Thank you, guys. It's 10:39. This is WGN. John Williams in the Allstate Skyline Studios. We're here on Saturdays after Mr. Fix-It, Lou Manfredini, from 10 to noon. We sure appreciate you tuning in. If you listen to us during the day, I'm on from 1 to 3 during the week. When there's White Sox baseball, I hope you know about this, this about all of us here at WGN Radio. If you hear White Sox baseball on our fine little radio station here, and we're happy to have it. Boy, especially these days when the weather's cold and we're bringing you some preseason sunshine, but if you don't want to listen to baseball, just go to WGNradio.com, and we are broadcasting all of our shows live on the stream. Ro Khan in the afternoon, Patty Vasquez in the evening, Justin Kaufman, who's bringing back Extension 720 at night, or my show in the early afternoon. If for some reason we're not on the air for White Sox baseball, we're still doing the show, and we hope you listen to us there. It was there that I interviewed this week Steve Gadlin. He's a funny guy who works for a company in town, and he's had a number of entrepreneurial endeavors which have sort of paid off. He's famously the guy who drew cats for you. For $10, he would draw a cat. It was a crazy project, but it kind of went viral, and it made him a little bit of money. He was the guy that was on Shark Tank. Well, he once told me, though, the story about how somebody reached out to scam him, and he sort of double-reverse scammed the scammer. There was some talk on the radio this week, what with it being, I guess, IRS tax filing time and all, that you need to be wary of people that are trying to get their hands on your money somehow and shouldn't be. Maybe they say they're with the IRS, they're an agent or something. But it just reminded me of Steve's story. So I called him up and I said, would you tell us a little bit about how that went? And that went a little bit like this.
So I received an email, one that probably looks like one you all received. But the pitch on this one was this guy wanted me, he's from Nairobi, Kenya. And he was offering his services as a movie maker and a writer, and said that for only $50,000, I could own an interest in this play he was about to write, which was going to make millions of dollars. So I was very interested in that, because here he was at least saying he was a writer, and I knew he wasn't going to get many people biting for $50,000. So I wrote him back and I said, I tell you what, man, I'll give you $50. If you write a play, it has to be to my specification. I'll give you the plot and you'll get $50 for that. And then I'm going to produce that play in Chicago, one of the greatest theater cities in the world. And I'll send you a video of the play you made for me. So he said, okay. And I sent him a plot line that was incredibly convoluted. It filled with a lot of pop culture references that I knew he wouldn't have access to in Kenya. Just this ridiculous story. And he sent me back a play a month later that was just terrible. And not, you know, it was partially terrible because of the ridiculous plot I made him write. But also his command of the English language was very limited. And from that point, we went ahead and produced the play. I put out a legitimate casting call. We got real actors in the city to perform his play verbatim as written, treating it like it was a Mammoth production. And it ended up being great. It was so fun to watch.
It must have worked on both levels, huh?
Oh, yeah. It was fantastic to see these actors give... you know, try to wrap their mouths around these impossible lines and, you know, really give it a serious treatment. And he then wrote a sequel for me, and then he wrote a musical for me. He's written a whole web series for me that's yet to be produced.
No kidding.
And, yeah, and my favorite script that he's written for me. So this is right after Shark Tank. I felt like I had some money to spend. I paid him $500 to write a script called The Big Lebowski 2, where he had never seen the movie The Big Lebowski. All he had was my one paragraph description about the first movie, a list of characters, and then he had to write the second movie for
me.
Okay,
before you finish that thought, though, was there anything, I'm thinking of like, Lisa.
You gotta tear me apart, Lisa!
Was there a moment in the first production, a line or something, that was the very essence of what the two of you had created? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, there is, and I'm digging through my drawer now because I have it printed on a t-shirt.
The line?
The quote is, you know we have all the time in this world than we may think.
You know we have all the time in this world than we may think.
Yes, which was delivered by actor Peter Kermitis very seriously, very passionately, but an absolutely meaningless collection of words.
And you kind of know where he's going with that, but that's not how you say that. So sure. Then he writes you a Big Lebowski?
Yeah, The Big Lebowski 2, the sequel that probably will never get made by the Coen brothers. But
did you ever meet this person in person?
No, he has asked a few times if I would find him a job in the United States and fly him out of Kenya. And I'll be honest, it's really, you know, it's a tricky relationship because I'm trying really hard never to exploit him. He, you know, that first exchange was probably a little bit exploitative because I felt he was trying to exploit me for money. But since then, we've developed a bit of a relationship, and he kind of understands why his stuff has appealed to me. And we've gone back and forth a few times, and we never met in person, but we've definitely sent videos back and forth and have sent emails back and forth as well.
No kidding. So you've laid eyes on this guy. Does he live in a hut? Does he have a house? Does he have a family?
He has a girlfriend and a child, and his latest thing is now he's trying to sell a book that he's written about his life. But I don't know. I don't know what his living situation is like. I know in the mall, there was that big massacre at a mall in Nairobi that was in the news a lot several years ago. And yeah. I checked in on him, and he was okay. And yeah, we've maintained a correspondence, but I try to keep him at an arm's length because there's not much I can do to really help him, you know.
Well, and I also think you need to be careful about a friendship, even if your motives are good, with yeah. somebody whose initial outreach to you was to steal from you. Right? I mean,
Who knows, maybe for that $50,000, he would have delivered a return on my investment.
Well, he did it for 50. He did it for 50.
Yeah, he did.
But that's it. So I wonder, did he like mass mail those out, and did people send him checks wanting to get in? You know, those things, however preposterous, work. I wonder if he was making money on that scheme.
I think, you know, that one in particular, I'm not sure. My guess is it was one of many that he was sending out with many different themes. And I would be surprised if anyone bit the way I did. But I saw it as an opportunity to have a little fun. So.
Yeah, right. Right, because maybe people were sending him money, maybe they weren't. But he wasn't writing plays for people. You're the only one that said, I call BS, but yeah, let's do a play anyway, right?
Yeah. And it was obvious from what he delivered to me that he wasn't really prepared to write a play.
Wait, I got to do what now?
Yeah, he probably Googled how to write a play, and that was, you know, the format of what we got. I had a real dream of producing a documentary. So the third play he wrote for me was a musical, and we never produced that one yet. And I wanted to produce it off-Broadway and fly him to the United States to see it and just tell this story of this random encounter is now giving this playwright in Nairobi, Kenya, an opportunity to watch his show play off-Broadway. You know, I think it'd be such a cool story, but I couldn't get anyone interested to help me put that together, so it never panned out.
I wouldn't give up on that, because I would imagine the Hollywood treatment of it, or the Broadway treatment, could make the play just enough better than it is, the one that he wrote for you, that you know, it was sort of a ironic or inadvertent hit, right?
Sure.
And I don't know, there's a movie or a musical in that, if you ask me. I mean, I think it could be a touching story, the redemption of the scammer by the scammy, or I don't know, I'm sure you've thought it through. I think there's a story there.
And with all these stick figure cats to draw, who has the time, John?
All right, Steve, what can we do for you? Thanks for the story. That's a lot of fun.
Of course.
Anything I can do for you these days? I mean, how do I get a stick figure cat if I want one?
Yeah, so I'm still selling them at iwanttodrawacatforyou.com.
That was available, huh?
Yeah, if you're on Twitter. Oh, it was, believe it or not. It was,
imagine that.
The domain was available.
What are the chances?
And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at catdrawingguy.
Steve Gadlin is the cat drawing guy. And what a story, huh? You know, I got to tell you, I really do think that would be... You guys remember the story about the Shags, that girl band from Indiana several decades ago, like in the 60s, 70s, their father thought that he had the Osmonds or the Jackson 5 there, and so he made his daughters learn to play instruments and sing, and they were really terrible, but they did put out some couple of CDs, and they gained some notoriety because of just how odd and awkward they sounded. Frank Zappa said they were an inspiration to him. That's all you need to know, right? But they made a musical production out of the Shags. That became a play, kind of a warm but true telling of the story of these girls who had no interest in or ability in music, but their father, who had a dream that they would, or whose mother had a dream that her son would have children that would someday be a singing sensation. And so their father said, okay, I've had daughters. We will realize mom's dream. And he gave them guitars and drums and said, now you girls play. What a strange story. They made that into a musical. I like Steve's story about the scamming the scammer. They meet. The play becomes a hit. That could be a movie.
The Shags movie is coming soon, too.
Oh, no, are you kidding me?
Starring Elsie Fisher, the lead from 8th grade.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't know that.
Yep.
Wow. Well,
so these scammers are truly people from Kenya?
This one was. Yeah, right. I mean, it could be next door, right?
Or right. That's what I always assumed.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. You almost think, maybe I will send him some money. I mean, the poor guy's in Nairobi.
Right, just be honest, right? if you're gonna go through all that.
I wonder if somebody's doing that. Hi, I have elevated my game. I'm not going to rip you off. I'll just tell you straight up. I'm in Nairobi. It's not real cool here. Please send me some money. That could work.
He's doing quite the, what is it called, door in the face method? I need $50,000. Okay, how about 50?
Yeah, okay, before you close the door, I'll settle for 50. Okay, fine, I'll give you 50. He gave him 50. And Steve did say that they are going to produce another one of this guy's plays. I'm especially connected to and love the story that Steve Gadlin just told, because when they did the production here in Chicago, they needed a narrator voice, and that was me. So I recorded the, we now go to a small town in Nairobi, or whatever it was. They had me do my Bill Curtis thing. So I was the voice of that production. And boy, I'd love to come back into the production with them. I believe we're listening to the Shags. To be made into a motion picture, the story of this band. I didn't know that. Name is Football, oh, this is my my dog's name is Footfoot.
I never find him home. I go to his house, knock at his door. People come out and say, Footfoot, don't live here no more. My pal Footfoot.
The dot on vocals.
My pal Footfoot. Now he has no home.
All right, that'll be enough of that. See, I always worry that when I talk about the Shags, I'm exploiting them. I don't mean to.
I think it's worth I was thinking about this with your Steve Gadlin conversation, and he touched on it too. But it's very worth being extra careful about. I can't help but laugh listening to the Shags. I'm sorry, but I can't. But then I feel bad, and well, I think that's a very potent emotion that is like worthy of exploring in a movie, but if you get the wrong person to do it, and it's the same with Steve's story, if you go in with the wrong, you just have to be very mindful.
Don't you think they struggled with that when they made the movie The Room?
The Disaster Artist, the movie about The Room?
Yeah.
That's
a guy who you don't really know what all's going on there. Do we make a movie to tell a story or to laugh at him or to...
And in that one, it's tricky. And I guess this is kind of in Steve's story, too, because he was a horrible person to the people around him, too. He treated people badly. So then you take that into account. It's not like you want to be nice to him. But you... And not that the guy that Steve is now basically friends with, it was horrible to him, but they met because he was trying to...
Rip him off.
So it's just tricky.
I absolutely think you're right. By the way, I said the Shags were from Indiana. I think because I was just channeling the Jackson 5, but they're from Fremont, New Hampshire. And that song you heard was from their LP they dropped in 1969 called Philosophy of the World. So, do you know when that movie's coming out about them? Do you know anything else about that?
I don't. That news was from October.
Yeah.
Being directed by Ken Kwapis, who's got a couple Hollywood movies under his belt and directed for shows like The Office. So, it's legit. I don't know when it's coming.
Yeah, no kidding. I do know this. It's 10:57. We've got the Stories That Matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom with Don Kleppen coming your way next. Strangest thing has been trending on Twitter. I'll get to that in this hour in our Vibe Score segment a half hour from now. Griffin's got a song he thinks you and I should hear. We'll rate it and then talk about some other things and score them on our scale of 1 to 100. We always do that in the last half hour on Saturdays. This is John Williams. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio, downtown Chicago, and we appreciate you tuning in. On Saturdays at this time, we always broadcast part of our podcast, the award-winning Mincing Rascals, this week featuring our own Patty Vasquez and Steve Bertrand from the Chicago Tribune, columnist Eric Zorn, and editorial cartoonist Scott Stantis. The gang began talking a little bit about that R. Kelly interview with Gayle King, and we start with not just my description of what happened, but of Gayle's now most famous and calming word, Robert.
Robert.
The coolest person in any room is now officially CBS's Gayle King, who sat calmly while R. Kelly exploded in an interview, insisting he's the victim of social media and greedy, lying women.
You can start a rumor on a guy like me or a celebrity, just like that. All you have to do is push a button on your phone.
Well, not everyone on Fox News could tell the difference between that interview and ABC's Roberts interview with Jussie Smollett.
I agree. Hats off to Gayle King for totally redeeming herself after the Smollett fiasco.
No. Jedediah, you know...
That was not Gayle King.
Oh, I knew that.
That was something... The world has been paying a lot of attention to this case. Why, Patty?
It's been going on for over 26 years, and the reporters who initially were trying to call attention to ring the alarm bells to this are still coming out. Like Abdon Palish and Jim DeRogatis are like, look, we've been talking about this. My issue right now with airing all this audio is, we've been airing it, and it's painful for survivors of sexual assault. This is it's very strange and horrific, and I think that he's crazy, but the whole story has been insane, and we need to hear more. We need to wait a little bit before we start airing and listening to. I don't think Gayle King is the coolest person in the room. I think
why?
It's,
I mean, because I, you know I why mean, I said mean, that,
right? Because she stayed calm and collected, and they
what
already have meetings.
What was your objection with the interview?
Listening to it. I mean, listening to somebody who did. I firmly believe assaulted these women.
You don't think there's any value in hearing his side of the story?
I think a lot of us don't want to hear from him. I'd rather.
So you're not interested in him telling his side of the story?
I'm not interested in hearing. I mean, you know,
technically he is.
He's
innocent until proven guilty, right?
Certainly, but that wildness. But we also have, we are also taking our time with, we've taken 26 years now, right? We've heard from him a lot, and he's been in court, and he said, I beat this. Rather than I beat this is not the same as I'm not guilty.
Well, when he came out during this interview and said, why did these people sell me their daughters? I mean,
And then I just don't think what we heard from him was a defense for him. I think it was an insight into him.
Well, he was trying to defend himself, right, Steve?
I suppose he was.
So watching someone having a meltdown on national television because they can't stand the pressure of the allegations against them, I guess, is what we're watching and listening
Let
to.
Let me ask you this, Patty. Do you think he helped his case?
I can't imagine that he did.
He, got so angry. He said, is this camera on me? And then he looks into that camera and he delivers that impassioned speech as if it were to a jury almost.
Is this camera on me?
Yes, it's on.
That's stupid. Use your common sense.
So, right. So we're going for the insane.
I can't answer that, Patty. I'm asking you if you thought that was helpful.
Rod Blagojevich tried a version of this. Remember before his trial, he was not quite as worked up as R. Kelly, but he did. He made this media rounds where he was like, "I didn't do anything. I didn't do anything wrong," and he went on Celebrity Apprentice, and none of it worked.
Where was he when he was on Celebrity Apprentice? In his in and out of jail, in and out of the governor's office. Well, when he was on Celebrity Apprentice, where was he?
Had he been acquitted the first time or not? There was a hung jury the first time?
He obviously wasn't in jail.
Patty went on, "I'm a celebrity, get me out of here."
She was like on the Amazon
The reason she had to go and not him was because it was, I think it was in Costa Rica or something. And so it was out of the country and he couldn't get. So he had been charged for sure. And I don't know whether it was for the first or second trial.
I have to break in. We have breaking news here. A Democrat's not running for president.
What?
Politico, as we're talking, just reported that Sherrod Brown is not going to run.
Really?
That makes two who have announced they're not running this week. Oh. The other one is Hillary Clinton.
Hillary said. Well, and Bloomberg, who's not exactly Democrat, he said he wasn't going to run either.
Are we all glad that Hillary's not running?
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Scott, yeah, I was with you.
I know how to draw her. So I'm a little disappointed. It's going to make my life a little harder, but this is where I was wrong. I was crowing about being right earlier. I was wrong about. I was convinced she was running because she did everything a candidate who says.
Do you think she could win, Scott? If it was her and Donald Trump,
I want to go into the tall weeds of American history. Is that when the person loses in the Electoral College, but wins big in the
popular vote?
Thank you, popular vote. They come back 4 years later and they win.
That's happened before.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but this is too crazy.
Al Gore
should have come back.
Wait a minute, Al Gore was not the president of the United States.
But Gore won in the popular vote. Had he
in
run
2000,
again?
But what's happened
in 2004?
He didn't run in 2004. And where it has happened is Andrew Jackson against Quincy Adams. He came back 4 years later and won.
Well, and won.
That's a trend.
It has happened. I'm trying to think of the other one where there's two or three other examples.
Isn't this the point, though? Would enough people in Wisconsin and Michigan who voted against Hillary be so disappointed with Donald Trump that they would vote for Hillary this time? They'd hold their nose and vote that way, the way they did the other way last time? I mean, that's the rhetorical question.
Don't you think that voters are looking for somebody a little bit newer than Hillary or Biden or Sanders?
Bernie?
At this
point? Come on. That rally here on Navy Pier over the weekend was packed.
No, it ain't Bernie. It is you. It must be you.
Those candidates, I don't think, are going to excite voters the way that they need to. And so, I think Sanders is too old to be president.
That's why mayor of South Bend, the city of 100,000 people, is destined to victory.
He was on Colbert the other night.
Oh, he's very good. Yeah. But, I mean, he's running a Buttigieg.
Mayor Pete, B-U-T-T-I-G-I-E-G.
I'm sorry. That was
37 years old.
I didn't know it was spelled that way.
He's only a few years older than the age of requirement to be commander-in-chief. He's a former Rhodes Scholar and a veteran of the war in Afghanistan. Would be the first openly gay nominee from a major party.
Gay with a husband.
Okay.
No, I mean, he's married. It's more than just gay. He's married.
Yeah.
Which I think is another
layer of baggage for people to manage.
I would say step for us.
I was actually Iowa, perhaps. On my podcast, on the Prickly Seed podcast, I had a guest on this week that's who he likes very much.
Well, the guy's, I said he's the mayor of 100,000 people. That's the problem. But otherwise, he's hugely impressive. I mean, if you listen to him talk, and some of the ideas he has, the way he articulates his ideas.
He's very likable that way.
You like Amy Klobuchar, right?
Well, sure I do. Yeah, I do.
Because of Minnesota.
Just because you're a masochist and you want to work for her.
Yes.
Yeah, she'll get over that.
Hickenlooper. Is someone to look at. Silly name.
Yeah, I can't have a president named Hickenlooper.
You guys are really discouraging today. You're laughing at people's last names.
Sorry about that. Yeah, my apologies.
But we didn't have a Barack Obama, whatever that is. But Hickenlooper just sounds so... Kamala Harris, Gillibrand, Castro. I'm just looking at the list.
We don't have that much time, John.
I know. Okay.
Are we going to talk about Aaron Schock at all?
Oh, yeah. What do you want to say?
I don't know what to say. What happened? I mean, and here, two things. I don't understand... I think we don't know yet, right, what happened.
We don't really know what happened. No, the case fell apart. It was in central Illinois. It came up here, and I guess the U.S. Attorney's Office up here took a second look at the case and decided that it wasn't prosecutable.
He's pleading guilty.
It fell apart as a series of felony charges.
He's going to have a clean record. He's just going to have to
pay $67,000 or something, and he could run for Congress again.
Jesse Jackson Jr. is going, what?
Hey, wait a minute. I didn't have to be in jail?
Not just Jesse Jackson, but what about Michael Cohen and Donald Trump if they're in trouble for campaign finance violations in writing these checks? I mean, is there any similarity to that and what happened to Aaron Schock?
I don't think that those guys should go to jail for campaign. I don't think anyone should go to jail for campaign finance violations. This goes beyond that. This was an abuse of his office. And he's admitted to this much, right? If you guys read the proffer, the agreement, whatever it was, where he says, yeah, I used to use my office to buy face value tickets to major sporting events, and I sold them at a profit. And he made a ton of money doing that.
Yeah.
And he doubled the actual mileage that he was supposed to be driving for reimbursement.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy was like a common little grifter.
So, two years later,
theft of government funds, making false statements, filing a false tax return. These are the charges against
him.
And
he's going to walk.
And he's going to totally
without
walk.
Without a trial.
And I don't know. There must be something in the way that investigation proceeded that they don't want to come out, that at a trial would embarrass the government. Because it just doesn't make any sense to me. The evidence that was laid out even in that agreement was prosecutable. Yeah. And so I don't get it. And I don't know if Aaron Schock has the chutzpah to run for office again.
But
if you remember what a bright light he was at one point. I mean, he was like a school board when he was 19
years
like
old.
That.
Then he was in the state legislature, I think 27, elected to Congress.
Bradley University grad and ripped. Right?
Well, I mean, on the cover of Men's Health magazine?
He was
Scott refuses to post on the cover of Men's Health.
He was on MSNBC this morning saying, that he was targeted, he said, in part because he was on the cover of Men's Health and because he was posting vacation pictures of himself on Instagram at a time when politicians weren't doing those things. He said, they all do it now. I was out there. I was out front and that's why they went after me.
You know, being on the cover of Men's Health gets you a lot of attention, right? Being one of the first members of Congress 10 years ago that was on Instagram.
They went after him right after they had that tour of his office where he had redone his Washington office to make it look like Downton Abbey.
Yeah.
And there was something very strange about the guy, but there was also something kind of compelling about it. I think that he could have run for Senate. He could have run for governor of Illinois. And, the whole... counterfactual history of Aaron Schock is fascinating.
It really is. That's Eric Zorn from the Chicago Tribune, Scott Stannis, the editorial cartoonist, our Patty Vasquez, and Steve Bertrand. The full podcast is up. It's The Mincing Rascals. By the way, one quick note about that. We'll pause and then come back and just play you a brief clip from our conversation with Aaron Schock. So after the Rascals recorded that on Thursday, Friday, Aaron Schock came on our show, and I was trying to get him to understand the problem some of us have with this. While those charges have been dropped, I'm not sure if they were dropped because he's just lucky and they completely screwed it up, or were they dropped because, in fact, the government decided he was not guilty of these charges. They didn't even present it to a jury, say, or a judge. And I'm not sure that it's not one or maybe a combination of the two. Anyway, they asked him about, we asked him about the time he decorated his office to look like the Red Room in Downton Abbey. And his answer was surprising after this. There were mileage charges against that Aaron Schock guy, and there was the misuse of campaign funds. That's why Steve Bertrand actually asked in our interview with Aaron Schock, what's the difference between him and Jesse Jackson Jr.? You heard Jackson's name come up in the Mincing Rascals podcast broadcast we just sampled for you. So all of that is also on my webpage at WGNradio.com, the Aaron Schock interview. And the very last question I had for him was essentially, maybe none of this would have happened if you guys hadn't decorated your office the way you famously did to look like the Red Room in Downton Abbey. Do you almost wish you hadn't painted the office in the scheme of Downton Abbey's Red Room, because that got so much attention, and if that hadn't happened, maybe it wouldn't have been such an interesting story. Do you know what I mean?
I do. And you know what's really interesting, John? I've never seen the show Downton Abbey. there's no truth to that. There's
Damn
no
you,
truth
Downton
to that headline.
Abbey.
Washington Post.
Congressman, you've had so much downtime. So, you could have caught up on it.
It's a good show.
I haven't. And so, I don't mean to be facetious, but every news outlet in the last 4 years has referred to me as Downton Abbey congressman.
Yeah, yeah.
And I scratched my head because the decorator from Jacksonville, Illinois, has done all these interviews saying she'd never talked about Downton Abbey. She had nothing to do with, you know, it being, she said she just picked red because she thought it was a bold color for the Capitol. Look, do I wish I could do that over again? Sure, absolutely. But was there a crime there? No. Was that maybe bad political judgment? Sure. I mean, but by the way, if you're going to start prosecuting congressmen for bad political judgment, line them up.
Congressman Aaron Schock, formerly of Peoria, now out of California, 4 years on the 31st of this month, it will be that he resigned his post, walked away from the job after having served three full terms. He was in his fourth. He was on his way to 8 years a Peoria congressman, and truly was a bright light in the Republican Party. And then all of that stuff crumbled around him, and it sort of went away, but it didn't. The feds were working on it, and then out of the blue this week, they said, yeah, never mind. And so now he's getting the last laugh. It's 11:27. This is WGN. We'll pause. Let's do the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom in just a minute. Afterwards, Griffin's got a song, our producer, that he thinks you and I should hear. We need to rate. And we'll also follow what's trending on Twitter this weekend. That's all coming up. But just know that I want you back. Just know that I want you back. Thank you, Don Kluppen. It's 11:35 on GM. I'll give you all the love I never gave before I left. Just know that I want you back. Just know that I want you back. Just know that I want you. I'll take the call on the phone tonight. I'll give you all the love I never gave before I left you. I know it's hard to hear it. What are we listening to, Griff?
That's the band Haim. They're going to be one of the headliners at the Pitchfork Music Festival.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
lineup was just announced
right
last week.
I didn't know that's what Haim sound like. I saw the lineup. You know, there were a lot of letters that I understand are words, and I didn't know what they all were. But I did recognize the Isley Brothers, the Staples, Mavis Staples, Bell and Sebastian. So there were some touch points for me, but and I knew Haim was important to some of y'all. You're a Haim fan, are you?
I was surprised to see them leading the bill on Friday night, which I assume means that they'll be the headliner. Maybe it'll be Mavis Staples, and then Haim closes the show. They're very popular, but I actually felt like they had a lot of buzz around their first album, and then when that song came out, Want You Back, that was the lead single from their second. And it felt actually like a little deflating, even though that song, I like it a lot.
Yeah.
We were just talking about it will remind you, and many, I assume, of Wilson Phillips.
It does.
I think that's intentional. It was very much a throwback. But
that's funny.
It was kind of felt like they were like poised to become superstars on that album after a really successful first one, and it didn't really happen. But that said, they're still like very popular, and they'll be headlining with Robin, Mavis Staples, all the people you said.
It's funny because I like Wilson Phillips, but I didn't like this song so much.
You like that song?
I don't know. Don Kleppen. We got to go to Don first because he can't keep the melody in his head very long. So
that's right. It dribbles out.
And he might throw it to me for sports, too.
That, too.
1 to 100, Don. How much did you like that song by Haim?
I'm going to give it a 72 because vocally it kind of reminded me of Michael Jackson for some reason. And right now, that's a negative. It's actually a downer.
Michael, I don't hear that. Interesting.
How about you, Joe Brand?
I like it. I'll give it an 85. I didn't catch the Wilson Phillips until you mentioned it, but upbeat mood, I could definitely picture circumstances where I'd listen to that song.
That's always the judgment, the way we judge.
And you liked it pretty well, didn't you, Griff? Yeah.
Yeah, no, I like that song a lot. I think it also has to do with the music video, which we cannot show you over the radio, but it's them walking down an empty Los Angeles boulevard, just the three sisters just kind of marching along to this song. It's all one take. I highly recommend looking at the music video, actually. I think my feelings about the song are tied into that, which I think is just really cool.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough.
Nice.
I didn't like it as much as you guys did. Maybe I'll look at the video. We talked about this earlier. I want you guys to 1 to 100 score for me the idea, Joe, I'll go to you first, of moving the pitcher's mound back 2 feet in the Atlantic League, which is some division of baseball. What's the matter?
This is great. I think moratorium starting next week on baseball rule change talk.
No, no. I'm going to start a podcast and
inside.
Honestly, that's fine. Go ahead. But
Griff, just so you know, this is my movie review. This is my thing that I can fully invest in.
Yeah, maybe we talk about movies too much.
Believe me, I know. But
no, this is a tangent that I explore too often. I'm intrigued by it and message. Message received, Griff.
No, I think you're right, though. I do the movie thing. Go ahead. Go forth.
Okay, here we go. Moving the mound back 2 feet. You like the idea or you don't. It'll increase the offense in baseball. But the mound will be back to 62.5 feet. Joe, 1 to 100. You like the idea?
I'm not crazy about it, but I don't know what good could come from it. It's one of those things I'd totally have to would see play out. I'm a believer that offense is going to come back eventually. The game has changed so much just over the past 2 years, let alone the past 10. But I'll give it a 60 because I would need to see it play out first before I can really make a judgment on it. But I think that's a huge momentum changer. I mean, that's a momentous change in baseball rules if you do that.
I think they need to take them, whatever the rule is, one at a time, because when you just throw them all out at me, I think, no, I don't want any of that. You know, just that's too much.
There are a lot of rules to reconsidering. Time between pitches, mound visits.
Need to make sure they're controlled variables.
Yeah, otherwise, how are you going to know which one's working?
Fair enough, but I like the idea just because I think the pitchers are so big and fast and strong. It's kind of cool to see these guys once in a while barrel up on a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, but mostly you don't. I want to give the hitters a little more advantage, so I'm saying, I'm giving it an 85, at least for experimental reasons. Griff, where are you?
Right now, there's too many rules being reconsidered, and I'm just down on all of them. Even if there's a argument for it, there needs to be some like orchestration of like, this is the rule we're thinking about now, and work on that for like 6 months or something.
Yeah, right.
Really take your time, because right now my feeling is just like, no, this is too much. Like, it's all too much.
Make the bases bigger. One other thing we pointed out earlier, we've talked about this before, was limiting the number of infielders on either side of second base. You have to have two. You can't do that shift. All right, so that's one thing to chat about and think about. But I did a sports one. Joe Brandon Sports has one that's not sports related. Joe, go.
Yeah, so this has become a recent topic with my family group text. My niece lost her first tooth about a month ago, maybe two. She recently lost another one. That tooth went down the drain. And for purposes of the tooth fairy, my sister said, well, why don't I use the previous tooth to trade with the tooth fairy for money? And I was just astounded the fact that she still had the previous tooth. And then it got into a conversation that a lot of times moms will hang on to baby teeth like an entire set. And it did bring me back to, I think a couple of years ago, we were cleaning out something in my parents' house, and we found a box set of teeth, and that it is the most mortifying thing in the world. I do not understand the reasoning, the significance. I health concerns question me in there as well. It's just...
Ever bear a child, Bucky? Maybe you'd have a little more appreciation.
But seriously, there's so many other mementos you can take. How about a trophy?
A lock of hair,
rather
perhaps.
Than his third molar.
Okay, so 1 to 100. What do we think about a little jar?
Classic millennial Joe wants a trophy for losing his teeth. Oh, congratulations! Like, you lost a tooth.
More like molar, anyway.
Joe's way down on this. Griffin, where are you on collecting and saving the children's teeth?
You know, it's the kind of thing I've accepted. I know that it happened in my life, but. And I've never really thought twice. When you say it out loud, it does sound a little funny. Like, I understand where you're coming from.
My wife did this, Joe, and I didn't know it. And I lifted the lid on a little porcelain, you know, container. And there was a bunch of teeth there.
And you thought they were after dinner mints?
The horrors.
Oh, my. That's exactly.
I said, I love these boys, and I don't get it. That was creepy to me. That was not... I didn't go, oh, these were in their mouth. I went, oh, yikes! I was like you, Joe.
It's the closest thing to a bone, no?
Well, it kind is? Of. Yeah, we have some bones, too, actually, from the kids.
But, I mean, like, if... I mean, you can't really compare it, because it's not like you lose a finger every once in a while.
I opened up a drawer, and there was a femur in there. I said, Brenda, this has got to stop.
Oh, but that was Griffin's first femur. Yeah.
Okay, so we're not loving it.
No, it's a little... I get it. It's twisted, though. It's
so, Joe, 1 to 100. Where are you?
0.
Don Kleppen, WGN Radio News. 1 to 100. Score that.
2.5.
Hey, if you are a person who keeps your kids' teeth in a jar... We are not judging you.
I'm not at all. I'd go like 70. I think it's fine. Yeah. I just don't feel very strongly about it. But I think, yeah, go ahead.
Don, you got one for us?
Gosh,
the answer can be no.
No. I did have something. I'm just dwelling now on all the like borderline serial killer mothers out there. But I get it.
I don't think that qualifies you for borderline serial killer
their
status.
They're trophies of the kids.
You think that's the next step in the progression?
Possibly. No, I don't. Like I said, it's a mother thing, so I can't really relate. But the thing that I was going to say, though, is that I was doing a story earlier today, did it a couple of times, about how there's a new antidepressant approved by the FDA. It's a nasal spray, and it's a cousin of ketamine.
Saw that.
There's a new growing brand of research which talks about how psychedelics are... looking to relieve some symptoms of PTSD, chronic mood disorders, anxiety, depression. Like there's just it seems like there's a lot of upside potential to like using psychedelics, which are obviously sort of controversial, but what they can do to help human conditions that seem to be pretty prevalent. And I love the idea of using ketamine. I like psilocybin from mushrooms, LSD. Like, not, you know, there's more research has to be done, more things have to be considered, but I really like the promise of what it shows. So I've been kind of really high on
that. Who was it that just wrote a book? It was a bestseller last year.
Michael Pollan.
That's right. Book. And I haven't read this. I've read some of his other stuff, but he said, yeah, I did the psychedelics to see what it was like. And he's arguing that we should do exactly what you said. Let's not stigmatize some of these hallucinogenics that can be very helpful to people.
It's a very good book. I would totally recommend it. I love Michael Pollan is a great author. And yeah, he just, the way he goes into his journey, obviously he went in skeptical, and just the things that he found out are fascinating. But yeah, I was thinking kind of like 1 to 100, what exploring psychedelics to see what they can offer humanity kind of.
Well, you mentioned that nasal ketamine, and my nephew's considering it because he's been taking the IV ketamine for a while.
Mm.
And I know people for whom that stuff has been a game changer. In general, listen, I'm on board medical marijuana and recreationals come in here. I think we need to sort of uncouple ourselves from some of our previous feelings about these things, so I'm kind of with you on that.
Yeah, I feel the same as you, John. I'm at like 100 on this. I love it.
I mean, yeah, I don't know enough about it specifically to really give a score, but it's clear that changes in the way we prescribe and, you know, the kinds of drugs and how they are prescribed. Like, a big change is probably needed, right? So,
yeah, no kidding. Mm. By the way, can I just tell you one other story about a guy who I know who is a bud tender in Colorado?
Heck yeah.
Which, you know, I think if you're doing the recreational marijuana sale, that's cool. I mean, it's legal in Colorado.
I looked at the music, just dropped out, like just really crushed that. Like, this bud tender in Colorado.
Very dramatic now.
The cops just busted in. You know someone?
Turn off that music.
Yeah, party's over.
He said to me, I said, so tell me a little bit about the cash flow and what the retail experience is like. And he said, well, he gets paid hourly, and it's kind of retail wages, which I was surprised. I thought it would be more. But he said, but the tips are pretty good. And I said, the tips, because you don't consume it like you do at a bar, right? You tip a bartender.
Mm.
He says, yeah, but we offer so much product information. You strike up a relationship with the customers. They come in and you say, hey, well, what do you need? Anxiety? Or are you just looking for pleasure? Or, you know, what experience do you want? And what's the right blend of marijuana products and,
exactly,
and marijuanas, I guess, that you need? And so these guys are like experts. They know. I don't know what it would be similar to. Maybe somebody selling you a scotch. I don't know.
Kind of. It's even more different than that, because like you said, like the thing with cannabis is that there's something called the entourage effect. There's like 400 different chemicals in one strain of cannabis. And yet, if you try and isolate them, they don't work the same way. So the entourage in every single different strain, like the combinations and what can result from them, the possibilities are pretty much endless.
He said so people will, not having consumed it, but have such a nice experience buying it, that he'll get a tip for $5, $10, $2, whatever, but people will tip him at the retail point. And we just don't have many experiences like that.
Yeah.
Mm. That's
unique.
And then does that become the standard? I mean, do they keep going back because they don't need the conversation anymore, right? They still have all the information they need.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Griff, you look like you have something on your mind over there.
No, not really.
Okay.
He's just thinking of a career change.
It's 11:48. Okay, I've just been teasing you guys with this one thing that I think is trending today on Twitter, and it's surprising to me. Finally, I get to mention that after this. Trending on Twitter today is fake Melania, and I saw some of that in my scroll last night and this morning and didn't pay any attention to it until I finally saw the picture and what all the fuss was about. The president and first lady are in Alabama paying tribute to the 23 victims of that terrible tornado earlier this week, and it's touching to see them walk among these white crosses that were erected and pause and then lend all of the presidential gravitas that you can and should at a moment like that. So I think that's an appropriate right setting and thing for them to do. Why wouldn't it be? Of course, it being Donald Trump, it's a little unorthodox. He was autographing Bibles for people. He was wearing what some people described as golf clothes. They weren't well fitting, but these are trivial things, right? But that's where we end up sometimes with the Trumps, particularly since this time the woman that was standing next to the president, the first lady, was photographed, and in many of the photographs did not look like the first lady at all. I didn't know that there was a conspiracy theory, just for fun, that sometimes Melania has a body double do work for her. But, boy, they were out in force, because some of the pictures of the first lady standing next to the president yesterday do not look like the first lady at all. In fact, when I first saw it, I thought, that's not a body double. That's not even a good body double. That's just another woman with brown hair. It was the first lady. It must say something about photographs and people who are photographed a lot, and you have an image of them, and then another picture doesn't look like what you expect, and so you say, aha! It's not that. Melania was there. But if nothing else, Don, you saw the picture, right?
I did.
The pictures that people are talking about, if nothing else, here's a takeaway. It's remarkable for this. The picture that you see that is true might not jive with what you have in your head. Like you say, I saw a picture, and so now I know something happened or somebody was someplace. Maybe you don't, because the picture can... Those photographs evidently aren't that reliable.
Yeah.
Those images did not look like the first lady, but it was.
Lighting specifically, I think, is, you know, that's a huge, huge changer of
She is
photos.
So striking and tall, and in these pictures, she looked much shorter. Like maybe she didn't have her heels on.
Mm.
It looked like her cheeks had fallen. Her hair looked different. It was just so strange. And so the way people do sometimes, the conversation continues now. Fake Melania is trending on Twitter today. So it goes. It's 11:55. We'll go into the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Hey, Amy, what's coming up? That's next. It is 11:58. Amy Guth is getting ready for her show, which will walk you up almost to Northwestern basketball. Not exactly, but you're going to go from your usual shift right now, noon to 1.
That's the one.
What are you going to do today?
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about some issues in the marijuana industry in Illinois. It's still kind of a new baby here. And we're kind of looking at the demographics of it because it's fairly homogenous. And some people who are not so homogenous are like, hey, let's think about diversity in this beginning stages of this industry to make sure that we're doing it right and thoughtfully and all that. So we're going to take a look at that.
Who's the first audience for that? Do you think it's younger people or older people will jump first at recreational marijuana?
I'm not sure. I don't know. I still kind of feel like the medical marijuana industry didn't quite take off the way it should have or could have, and I think everyone expected to in Illinois. So I don't know. It'll be interesting. I think we have this kind of wide open field to see. I'm guessing younger, but who knows? We've been surprised before.
I'm just thinking of that generation of people my age who were having to dodge it all along, the issue. And now, if the floodgates were open, I think they have the money and the inclination and maybe the experience, so they would maybe be every bit as anxious as younger people, but I don't know.
You know, it's been interesting. On a personal note with that, my dad, in his 20s at one point, he was a narc. And so very anti-drug, you know, narratives in the household growing up.
Worked for the police, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
And that was a career he had in his early 20s, very briefly. And my mom said, you're going to need to find another career before we start a family, for sure.
Yeah.
And as he has gotten older and had some health concerns, he's really, it's been interesting to watch his transition to thinking about, you know what, I could have some pain relief. I could have, you know, perhaps a better appetite. I could have these things, as he's been addressing some major health issues. It's fascinating to hear my dad talking about marijuana in such an interesting way. Now, the state he lives in, it is not yet legal, but he's talking about CBD and things like that. So
no
it's,
kidding.
It's
wow.
Really interesting to, you know, to go from like, so-and-so is doing the pot, right? such a admonishment to like, hey, can you hook me up with some of that from Illinois or should I go to Denver? Or like, it's been kind of funny to hear that. So yeah, so that's where we're starting today. And then from there, we'll talk a little bit about Lincoln Yards, Elizabeth Warren's personal finance book that she wrote in 2005. We're going to take a look at that and how just kind of how it stacks up now. And a company that plans to bring high-speed internet to every place on Earth through a series of satellite launches. That would be handy.
Yeah, no kidding. We could use that, too.
Yeah.
We'll be listening. Thanks, Amy.
Thanks so much.